We have to talk about a number that should be keeping every American up at night.
If children are not reading on grade level in third grade, they are four times less likely to graduate from high school. And if children are living in poverty, that number jumps to 13 times. That is shocking and not okay.
I cannot believe how crazy that is.
You are learning to read until third grade, and then after third grade, you really need to know how to read in order to learn and comprehend your other subjects. And so that's why it's so critical. And that foundation is everything. So since 2009, Catch Up and Read has trained over 500 teachers and had the benefit of improving education and outcomes for over 50,000 students.
What you're doing is so powerful, and I'm so proud.
Carol Golia has built her career turning strategy into meaningful impact. From her early days at Frito-Lay to helping scale one of the nation's largest giving movements, she is an expert at building communities and driving meaningful change. Now, as CEO of Catch Up and Read, she's focused on one of America's most urgent challenges, early literacy.
Really, it is a teacher professional development program that is disguised as a tutoring program. Overall, there was about an 86%, I think, retention rate in the school district versus 92% for those who had been in Catch Up and Read. And then for new teachers, the district average in the schools that we were in was 76%, but 100% stayed in the school district if they had been a part of Catch Up and Read.
Is there one skill set that you feel like from your days of Frito-Lay that has really just served you well in this nonprofit space?
Learned in marketing about building a brand, whether that be resonating and learning how, you know, you want someone to think, feel, and act. And how do you build awareness for something that is so needed? And how do you bring people into the mission? That is really, really important. It is like running any other business because you have to motivate the team and keep the financials and do all the things.
What skill or insight would you bring from your nonprofit world that you wish you knew at Frito-Lay?
I think just how important.
We have to talk about a number that should be keeping every American up at night. It's the number 13. And why does this matter? Basically, that if a child is living in poverty and is not on grade level in reading, they are 13 times less likely to graduate high school. And that is a situation that needs to change. It's the finish line at third grade that students need to be able to transition from learning how to read to reading to learn. And if they don't, then they might get left behind and earning a living wage. And it's just such a critical, pressing issue. My next guest, Carol Golia, is going to explain all of that. And she's had a great journey from days at Frito-Lay and then moving into the nonprofit world. But today, it's all about literacy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, we've been talking about recording this for I don't know how long. And I know our schedules have been insanely busy. But I wanted just to jump into this alarming statistic that is just, I was shocked. I mean, I do a lot of research and it just shook me to the core that there's such a big literacy issue, but the tragedy if it doesn't get caught early enough. So tell me about the statistics and the data.
You're exactly right. Annie Casey did the landmark study that shows that if children are not reading on grade level in third grade, they are four times less likely to graduate from high school, just regular children. And if children are living in poverty, that number jumps to 13 times. That is shocking and not okay.
It is not okay. And I still, like, we've talked about this statistic for a while now. And every time I hear you, it's still just, I cannot believe how crazy that is. And when you think about that notion of you transition in third grade, and you think about those little eighth grade or 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds, and they're trying to be a kid. And the fact that when they don't, it just shuts doors, right?
That's right. Yes. And because, like you said, you are learning to read until third grade. And then after third grade, you really need to know how to read in order to learn and comprehend your other subjects. And so that's why it's so critical. And that foundation is everything.
Well, I think I have this clip that I want to remind you about, and you won't believe this, but Carol created the Joyful Results Club. And I love that. And so this video, let's look at it. Can we do that?
Yes.
Okay, let's look. I love it.
Go.
This one or the B?
This one right here.
This one?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, with the B and the A?
Yeah.
Bat.
You got it right.
I'm starting to learn.
You are.
It just melts my heart.
I know.
Every time I see that. So explain kind of your methodology at Catch Up and Read is kind of different. And that little boy, just the joy in his eyes and his face and the high five moments. Tell me about how it works.
Yes, that was little Josiah. And he was so excited because he was breaking down the letters and blending the letters to make a word. And so that's what we have found is the critical component is focusing on phonics and breaking things into little steps. And that way you can have small wins and get so much more excited and really be joyful every day after school. Catch Up and Read was founded by Catherine LeBlanc, a woman who was volunteering in schools and saw that students needed so much more help than a volunteer could provide. And she said, what help did the teachers need? Do they have all the right training? What supports do they need? And so she created this two-prong model that benefits both the teachers and the students, and which is a win-win. So we train teachers in best practices in reading instruction and then pay them stipends to stay after school and tutor children. And one of our board members who was one of our former teachers said, really, it is a teacher professional development program that is disguised as a tutoring program because teachers are getting so much benefit out of it. It's really an active practicum for the teachers where they practice those best practices in reading instruction after school while they're helping children who need extra support. And the children love it. And so the Joyful Results Club, they're in an after-school club, Catch Up and Read, and they are so happy. They're always asking the teacher, you know, is it time?
Well, and wasn't there a story where there are kids that say, is it Catch Up and Read Day? Is it today? And share some of those stories.
Absolutely. So when I first was involved, I would be walking through the halls and coming to see if what was going on at school and how our program was running. And the students would say, is it Catch Up and Read Day? And they'd love it.
Well, I think the other thing I want to think about in the business world, because you know that I'm on a nonprofit board as well. And I think there's lessons that people can learn from nonprofit that businesses aren't doing today. Because a lot of times I know it's like, what can a nonprofit learn from a business?
Right, you're right.
But I think what you just described about the teacher, and it's kind of a development program for teachers in disguise. What I saw in that video was just this high five moment. And I think of it as that reciprocity of joy and the circularity of joy. Mm-hmm. And so from a business perspective, what do you think some people might be able to take away from what you just said, that little magic of it's disguised as it's really a development program, but it's disguised as something else. How do you think that could apply in the business world today?
Well, I mean, anytime that you have that practical hands-on experience where you're learning something new and then teaching, I think that really is what seals in the knowledge. We are really data-driven program, so we're also showing people how to use data to drive instruction. And so teaching teachers how to use reading assessments and literacy assessments to understand what a child needs, where they've fallen behind. And then when they do the quick diagnostic, see what a child needs, they're able to pick the lesson that they need and see those results right there. And then they get that immediate feedback and the reciprocity from the student, and it just feeds on itself.
I think that's amazing. And I was just thinking in the training, because I always ask companies today, is your training budget higher or lower than it was 5 years ago? And people sheepishly, their eyes turn away and they don't want to answer the question because, we know marketing budgets and training budgets, those are the ones that get cut. And I think that learning, that curiosity is powerful for any age. So I think a lot of the people listening or watching, they can learn from that, you know, making learning fun as an adult, right?
Exactly.
Because that's what it is. And show me, I think there's this little surprise moment that you have. And tell me about this little, tell me what it is. And then why this little special story about this little boy?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so these are the medals that we give out at our reading rallies, which are our graduation ceremonies that we do at the end of the year. And we put the medals over the child's neck and congratulate them for their great reading growth. And it is so much fun for the families, the teachers, everyone to feel so accomplished. One of the learning specialists from the school district was at a school in October. And so this is, you know, months after and in a new school year after we've had the graduation in May. And it was at a school where we had moved on from that school. So we weren't there every day anymore. And the learning specialists texted my colleague and said, Jacob has on his Ketchup and Reed medal. I can't believe it. And it was October. And so we wrote back and said, oh, that's the cutest thing ever. And by the way, ask him, why does he have that on now? And she asked him and he said, I like to wear my Ketchup and Reed medal sometimes because I'm just to remind myself how proud I am of myself.
Wow.
Can you believe?
What you're doing is so powerful, and I'm so proud. I mean, we've known each other a long time, and that generosity of spirit, it's just amazing, the progress and the work that you're doing with these kids. And it's such a special thing, and that's why it's one child at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so different. And we think about your days at Frito-Lay, and that's where we actually met. And we chatted about how long ago was that? We don't remember. But what's funny is you think about having to scale a brand. And so you have the chops from tried and true CPG world. And then you're taking these strong disciplines and applying it in a nonprofit world. And I just believe that that one child at a time is so different than a brand. But how do you have to balance scaling? Because I believe you started at one location and now it's 27 schools and thousands of children. And how do you take that scale and apply it to where you are today?
Yeah, it's hard, you know, because it is a child by child and down to the smallest letters of every word. But also we do scale, and we scale because with teachers, you know, a teacher, once they're trained to work with 4 children after school or 8 children after school, they can take that back to their classroom and they have 22 students per classroom. We can then train the whole grade of teachers. So then they, you know, are reaching hundreds of children per school that year. And then once they have the learning, of course, that's forevermore that they're teaching. That many more students are having the benefit. So since 2009, Ketchup and Reed has trained over 500 teachers and had the benefit of improving education and outcomes for over 50,000 students.
And I think you had mentioned that there's like a waiting list, or the demand is, you know, so much greater than what capacity supply you have, right?
That's right. We do have a waiting list. And so we have a waiting list in Dallas ISD where we are currently, and then also in Richardson and Fort Worth. And then we have districts calling us all the time. And so we're so excited to be able to go wherever the need is and just need the funding to get there.
I was just going to say, there's a lot of people in Dallas, Fort Worth and around the country. What is it that they can do to really help Ketchup and Reed? Because it is such, it's such a critical, critical issue for our country. So what can companies do to help?
Well, they could sponsor a school, of course, which would be great. They can invest in Ketchup and Reed and helping us take the model to more schools. That is the best and, of course, most helpful. We can also use volunteers at those reading rallies where we're giving out the medals. They can help us by cheering the students on, serving dinner to the families, helping us recognize the teachers. And also just helping us even prepare the materials for the beginning of the school year and doing teacher appreciation. There's lots of ways to volunteer as well.
Yes. Well, I think you can count one new volunteer at one of those, because I want to be there when those kids are getting their medals.
Yes.
It's just adorable. And I want to think about one of the things is the skills needed in a nonprofit are actually the same as a little corporate, whether it's marketing or data analytics. Or so what are those skills that you learned from those early days at Frito-Lay that you use today?
That's a great question. And you're exactly right. It is like running any other business, because you have to motivate the team and keep the financials and do all the things. And we also can use skills-based volunteers. So we have volunteers now that help with our financial projections and serve on our board and our advisory council. And yes, I mean, we need all the IT support too. We're merging our systems right now and just thinking about all the different kinds of IT providers and signing our lease.
Oh my goodness, kind of thing, I didn't even think about
all
that.
All sorts of things that we need help with.
Wow, yeah, so it is. It's like running any other business. Mm-hmm. Is there one skill set that you feel like from your days of Frito-Lay that has really just served you well in this nonprofit space?
Well, you and I were both in marketing. And so all the brand work, of course, is really important. And how do you build awareness for something that is so needed? And how do you bring people into the mission? That is really, really important. So a lot of the tools that we learned in marketing about building a brand, whether that be resonating and learning how, you know, you want someone to think, feel, and act.
Oh, I remember those.
Think, feel, do. Yes.
Think, feel, do. Yes.
Yes. And so, you know, how do you want the child to think, feel, and do? What do you want the teacher to do? What do you need a donor to do? What do you need your staff to do? And crafting all those messages, I think, is really important.
Well, I think then the obvious question is, what skill or insight would you bring from your nonprofit world that you wish you knew at Frito-Lay?
Oh, that's a good question. I think just how important the community is. Mm. And how, I mean, a lot of small business owners know this, and I know you know this in the restaurant industry too, when, I mean, you need to support the community and they will support you. And so, you know, working at PepsiCo is a national, global business. And so, and you think in such high levels, you're not thinking about, I remember there was a conversation about even funding the ballpark that was near our headquarters and how they couldn't decide if they wanted to do that or not, because all of the spending was being spent on the national brands. And it does matter.
It does matter.
Investing in your local community and your employees. And
so if you could imagine those leaders, because we were in those meetings, those conference rooms back at off of Legacy Drive, is what would you tell those leaders? Like, imagine, I won't name names, but if you can imagine, you know, the CEOs or the CMOs back then, what do you wish that you could tell them to say? Because imagine if they would have done that 20 years ago or 15 years ago, what an impact. So what would you, if you could go back, what would you say?
Well, luckily, I think PepsiCo in particular does a great job of investing in the community. And it's really an investment in your current workforce and your future workforce. Mm-hmm. So not only it's your employees that live, work, and play in the community, but and where you're going to find your current talent, mm-hmm. But also your future workforce. And from an education perspective, like we said, if you can't read, then you can't learn and master other subjects. You can't become the food scientist that you need at the food company or the engineer that you need at the engineering firm.
And I think that what you just said, the fact that you're working on a critical factor that will either make or break the future pipeline of talent mm-hmm. in America, and that limitation is really a monumental task to be done. But let me ask you a question. Is let's rewind a little bit, because your journey is so fascinating. And I think in your little Carol self, there was a lemonade stand called Carol's Lemonade. And tell me about that experience. I know that was your first job. walk me through little Carol working at the lemonade stand.
Yes. My parents were having a garage sale. And so we had a whole lemonade stand, and we painted Carol's lemonade with spray paint. And I sat there with my neighbor Carrie and my stuffed animals, and we sold lemonade to everyone who was coming to the garage sale.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. And I always think about, if I think about that little Carol's, that sign, it was the beginning of your marketing.
True. And I guess my mom probably helped me a lot with that.
But the fact that you learned that you needed to create awareness for your lemonade stand, because you could have just had a table. And you had the cute factor with the little stuffed animals. So who knew that those little, the marketing spirit was there. And tell me more about, you know, your background and how you grew up. Are there other stories or memories from your childhood that really inspired you to where you are today?
Oh, well, there's so many. I've been fortunate to have an amazing family in growing up here in Dallas that, they really taught me how to give back. My mom went to SMU and was very invested in the community, and as was my dad, and had businesses that were founded here and then wanted to give back to the city that helped them grow.
That's amazing. And I guess I didn't know. So your mom went to SMU?
Like you.
I know. So that's good. Go Ponies. And I want to ask, I think there is Ollie May, did I get that right?
Yes, that's my mom's mom.
That's your mom's mom. And I remember we were talking about a wonderful little phrase that she says. So tell me about that.
She said, inch by inch, life's a cinch.
And there was a yard by yard?
Yard by yard, life is hard, but inch by inch, life's a cinch.
Okay, so you have to explain. So I will always remember that phrase now, and I probably will borrow it from Ollie May. And I want to understand in her life, in her world, why was that phrase? Because clearly it's a phrase that you heard often that you remember. And what was behind it?
You know, my grandmother was the first in her family, I think, to go to college, or at least the first woman. And she was a realtor, and then she was an artist. She also had a lot of health setbacks. She had tuberculosis. And so in the day when she was getting treatment, you collapsed the lung. And then with the hopes of reinflating the lung, and it never reinflated. So she lived a lot of her life with one lung, which you can do, but had drainage. She had to have a hole in her back for the rest of her life after that to drain the lung.
Wow.
I know, all these things that you wouldn't think of. Yeah. But anyway, she was just very persistent and, you know, always would encourage us to carry on.
I wonder, do you know if like her mom said that, or did she ever share with you?
I don't know. I don't know where it came from, but she would say it. And then my mom would always say whenever we were getting discouraged, you know, inch by inch, life's a cinch, just break it down, you know, break it down into small pieces.
Well, and is there a story that you can, that help when you thought of that line, that it helped you get through a situation, or whether it's personal or professional, that you remembered little Ollie Mae standing on your shoulder and just saying, inch by inch, life's a cinch?
I don't know, a lot of things. I mean, really anything in work, you know, you're getting frustrated. I think the whole reading this, it's really a national crisis, the literacy crisis that we have, that children are so far behind, and that is huge. And so I think just reminding ourselves that inch by inch, you know, child by child, letter by letter, we can get there.
Oh yeah, that's powerful when you think it. You do literally break it down to letter by letter. That's amazing. Well, I think about another fun story. We were at an event yesterday and I got to see your daughter. I didn't get to actually talk to her, but I think there was a backstory of her entrepreneurial spirit that, why don't you share that with us?
Yes. When she was in first grade, she checked out a book from the library about being an entrepreneur, and she was brainstorming what could she do. A lot of it was about babysitting businesses and, you know, things like that children can do. But she was only in first grade. And so she said, and we love camp. And so she said, can I have a camp at our house? So she created Camp Celebrate, and we had it every year, every summer at our house on Memorial Day.
And how old was she, did you say? How old?
I think first grade.
Wow.
Yes.
First grade.
So she was Counselor Kate, and she recruited her friends to be the counselors. And those, because you needed children to be younger than you, so we had, you know, four-year-olds come over that were the campers. And
how many years? How many years was that? I mean, you did it.
She probably did it 5 or 6 years. Yeah.
Okay. So it was fun to actually see her yesterday. And so what do you think the lessons that she learned about that? Because you had your lemonade stand.
Yes. Well, I had her keep the whole P&L, and she had her expenses, and we set up a bank account for her, and she would record how much everything cost, and then we would she charged for the camp so that she could see what that is.
Yeah, that's incredible. I wonder, and you know, I wonder, my data shows that only 15% of Gen Z actually have had those early jobs. So whether it's babysitting, mowing the lawn, all of those things, they just don't have them. And so I think it's really, I think it could be as pressing of an issue as the literacy, because they're not learning how, exactly what you just said. It's the accountability. Oh my gosh, first grade and you're accountable for four-year-olds. I mean, that's a pretty incredible thing. So do you feel like is there an opportunity or a gap to fill in those fun jobs for kids? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think, yes, I think it is, because we're all so programmed and you need coverage for your children all day. So you immediately put them into, if you work, into summer camps and things like that. And then they don't have jobs.
Yeah. And they come into the workforce basically with no skills. And then we wonder why they're stressed and not successful and not liking it, because they don't have just those basic customer service. I mean, I think about a lemonade stand, you know, you were transacting with the consumers and your customers. And then for your daughter, I think there was a comment too around one of the parents was like, wow, you have a lot of kids here. So tell me about, wasn't there a fun story?
One of my friends pulled up and said, okay, you know, here's my daughter that I'm dropping off, and her son. And she said, oh, there's a lot of campers. I'm sorry that we're late. And I said, oh, no. Those are the counselors.
Which is hilarious, because like all the first graders. And that is so funny. And so if you were talking to business leaders today about taking a chance on young people, like, what are some of your life experiences that people took a chance on you? You know, whether it was your Frito-Lay days, whether it was high school or college, what do leaders need to hear? Because I feel like today leaders are like, oh, you know, you got to have 12 years of experience on any job today.
Right.
So what would you tell leaders today about that?
Well, is giving people a chance, you know, and that is becoming hard with AI, because now people are giving the jobs that they would have given to an intern. They're doing an AI, but then people don't have the opportunity to learn. So yes, definitely give people a chance. And even if it's just shadowing or in encouraging their own children.
Well, I think I have an idea. So I think if companies think about your, going back to the catch up and read, is that idea of making work fun, for lack of a better word, I know a lot of people might eye roll, like, you know, like, I don't have time to train somebody. But I feel like we were so blessed at Frito-Lay to be able to have like mentors and people that invested in us. Mm-hmm. And I wish corporate leaders today would say, yeah, I need to leave space in my teams at time to invest in other people. I mean, any thoughts?
I agree. And it is hard. It's hard to find time. And you do have to spend that time. But it's worth it, because usually, you know, I partnered with UTD for North Texas Giving Day, and when I worked at Communities Foundation of Texas, and several of those students ended up either giving back full time or continued to volunteer with the nonprofits that they were matched with.
Wow.
And I hired some of the people that had taken on different things.
I think that goes back to what you were saying about that involvement in the community. And I think, again, another idea for companies today is, not only getting involved, whether it's sponsorships or, you know, in the restaurant world, they give back a lot of food, but those college opportunities to be able to get people excited about an industry. Mm-hmm. I think that's exciting because I think today, I'm not sure if, I don't know if there's the teacher shortage, if that's still a thing, but people need to be excited about being a teacher.
Yes, they do need to be excited about being a teacher. So that's one thing that we have also seen in Ketchup and Reed is the benefits to teachers. We actually have great retention scores. So teachers that have been a part of the Ketchup and Reed program, overall, there was about an 86%, I think, retention rate in the school district versus a 92% for those who had been in Ketchup and Reed. And then for new teachers, the district average in the schools that we were in was 76%, but 100% stayed in the school district if they had been a part of Ketchup and Reed.
And so at the end of the day, if you could say that headline about why it helps, it's like, it helps retention, right?
Yes. It helps retention. And I think they say that it takes, you know, probably at least $20,000 to recruit and train a new teacher. And so for all those teachers that you're saving that money for, and they're better teachers. And I think for us, teachers are telling us that they saw the results. And so in those joyful results, that confidence and results, they saw that, which then built their confidence. And then achieving is believing. And then you start getting so much more satisfaction out of your job. And you had that cohort that you're learning and succeeding with, and you want to stay.
Well, and I think that at the end of the day is the magic secret sauce just to retention in general, because it's that reciprocity. It's the results. It's the confidence. And I will tell you, Gen Z specifically, they are struggling with confidence sometimes in the job. And so it goes back to taking that time. I do want to, you mentioned community foundations and, you know, we worked at Frito-Lay together, but then we had a great time reconnecting at community foundations and you were there 9 or 10 years. But the number I remember was that you went from $5 million to $50 million as the largest fundraising day in the country. And so share a little bit about your journey of how you went from Frito-Lay into community foundations and that little journey, that pivot from corporate America to the nonprofit world.
Yes. Well, I was so lucky to have the role at Communities Foundation of Texas overseeing all of the marketing communications. And one of the projects there was North Texas Giving Day. And I was honored to bring the mass marketing experience I had from PepsiCo to make that a really region-wide giving event for our whole community. And as you said, we were not only the biggest event in Texas, but in the United States and really the world for community-wide giving days. And it's just been amazing to see that groundswell of generosity across our region.
And is there an insight? I want to ask that same question. Was there an insight from Community Foundation that you pulled forward into Ketchup and Reed?
I think just the power of urgency, of the urgency of the cause, the urgency of the need, and the power of the power to the people, you know, and really, you know, showing them what they can do.
Well, and I think the other one that's, I know in your future state is the scalability, because the fact, you know, we're sitting here today at one, or you were at one school, now at 27. What are your dreams of where to take Ketchup and Reed?
Well, we have dreams of being able to support any schools that and students and teachers that need our support. And so, yeah, we're excited to think about how we can do that.
Big, lofty goals. Mm-hmm. I love that. Well, I want to ask you a question that is an interesting one around, you know, I've been working on the business of joy for the last 5 years. And I came up with this idea about how do we keep the business side of things without killing the joy in our day-to-day world?
Always hard, but life is short. I mean, we have to have fun. And so, and really that's what keeps you going. You have to have that satisfaction and joy out of what you're doing, or why are you doing it?
Can I clone you? I want to clone you because I couldn't agree more. And I know we were even talking before we hit record, and you know, our to-do lists are always so long, but we have to pause and celebrate. And It is. It's even though we spend a lot of time at work, it's got to be fun. But sometimes I feel like our lists are a little long. Maybe we don't have the resources, but I always say joy is a choice, right?
Joy is a choice.
Joy yes. is a choice. Well, I want to ask you, I have my kind of lightning round that I love to do at the end of our interviews. And so I have three questions on a card, and I would love to ask you to pick one, and I'm going to ask you this question.
Okay.
Awesome. And I have my little invest in joy cards. All right. If you could go back in time 20 years ago and get a message from today, and it could be about anything, what would that be? So if you could go back in time 20 years ago and get a message from today, what would that be?
I think just believe in yourself. Believe in yourself and faith over fear. You know, just believe in yourself and believe in God that there's a plan.
There's a plan. Faith over fear. Tell me more about that.
Well, I think when you phrase anything in terms of learning and letting go, then you can really accomplish anything. And that is one of the things that I really had in mind when I took on this current role at Catch Up and Read. I'm honored to be the CEO, and there's always great opportunities in leadership and hard things. And so I've tried to approach everything about learning, and a lot of that is hard. And even growing children and the overall reading goals, that is hard. You know, we are working with teachers who then work with students, but there's a lot in between there. And it's the closest I've been, but I'm not the student themselves, you know? Right. So you have to have faith that you're doing the best you can and that the magic will come.
The magic will come and the joy will come.
And the joy will come.
Well, and I want to just ask a quick question. And I know we spent some time together yesterday at a very special event, kind of a celebration, and we'll just touch on it. But I was moved by that. And I'll let you tell the story, but you can tell the brief story about why we were there. But the whole idea of change, there were probably 50 women sitting in this room. There were people of all generations, you know, your children, your mom, your mom's friends, your work friends, your church friends. And it was such a powerful day. And when you said about faith over fear, it just reminded me so much of yesterday. Do you want to just share a couple points on that?
Yes. Well, yesterday you were so kind to be there, but this year is the 10th year that I'm celebrating survivorship from breast cancer. And I'm so honored to be alive and sitting here today. And I had been working at Communities Foundation when I was diagnosed back in 2015. And we have a room there that we have community events. And so I officed on the courtyard that was across from that room, and I like to visualize victory. And so I looked over there and I said, when I get through this, I want to have some kind of celebration for those who have supported me through this. And that's what we did yesterday.
And because of COVID, we couldn't do the 5-year, but we did the 10-year. And I will say it was so moving. Everybody I talked to at the event was just so moved. And there were things around how to manage change. And we went around the circle and we all talked about whether it was work, college applications, high school applications, medical struggles, and this incredible change model that just, I think you changed lives yesterday. I mean, you really did in the way you structured that. So thank you for that gift.
You're
of
welcome.
Yesterday. It was fabulous. So my tradition at the end is I always ask all of my guests to write a question in this book for the next guest. And so what I would love for you to do is actually do that for me. So here you go. And let me, there you go. And it can be anything.
Okay.
And so my next guest will actually be able, I'll ask the question. Awesome.
Yay.
Well, thank you again, Carol. It has been my pleasure, my honor, my joy to spend some time. And I think you have so many incredible insights and wisdom that can help in the nonprofit world. It can help in the business world. And I wish you all the best in getting that literacy, just inch by inch, life's a cinch, making those milestones happen. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yay! Yay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.